The Heart of Rural America is brought to you by the new auction platform, Bid on Beef. We invite you to buy beef the cowboy way through an honest bidding process where you have the power to pick the ranch, pick the cut, and pick the price. You are in the driver's seat, and we are excited to ship beef directly to your door. Use code WELCOME10 for your first $10 to shop when you register to bid at bidonbeef.com. Welcome to the Heart of Rural America podcast. I'm your host, Amanda Radke, an American cattle rancher and motivational speaker, raising my kids and writing children's books in South Dakota. There's a David and Goliath story unfolding in agriculture today. And I don't know about you, but my money is on the underdog, the hardworking folks who value faith, family, freedom, and their farming communities. This show will highlight the untold stories of these resilient and determined families who I have the great pleasure of meeting in my travels across this nation as an agricultural speaker. It is my hope that their stories will remind us to live with great courage because we are not alone in this fight to keep producers on the land and meat, dairy, and eggs on the dinner table. Now let's hit the dusty trail together as we uncover the heart of rural America.
Welcome to your show. Here's my mom, Amanda Radke.
Hey everyone, Amanda Radke here, back for another episode of the Heart of Rural America podcast, the show where we highlight great people doing inspiring things in their rural communities to make agriculture and this country stronger. Today's guest is a return guest who's been on the show before. You guys are no stranger to this gentleman. He is a Marine. He's a business owner, a horse trainer, an advocate for agriculture and the Western way of life. And he is the founder of Western Justice. David Duquette, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Amanda. I appreciate it.
You know, we've had a lot of phone calls lately where I feel like if we had just recorded them while we're both barreling down the road, they would have been pretty interesting primetime stuff. So I kind of thought, you know, as we kind of digest this presidential election and what comes next and what to look forward to in 2025 and beyond, I thought it'd be good to maybe just catch up with you and kind of get your perspective. You were connected to the Trump and Pence administration. You did a lot of work with Western Justice during that time. And so maybe just to start, can you tell folks who you are and what Western Justice does and maybe some highlights that you guys have been able to accomplish in your tenure?
Yeah. So almost the whole first administration for Trump, I was running Protect the Harvest. So that was a really good time for us, especially after the Hammond pardon. It was kind of funny, and I tell people this, it was everybody thought I had a direct line to Trump afterwards, so which I didn't. I didn't have a direct line to Trump. I had Pence's chief of staff's cell phone number, but I didn't have, you know, a direct line to Trump. But everybody assumed it. So if I called the Secretary of Ag or I called the Secretary of Interior or the EPA administrator, they all returned my call, or, you know, so it was a really productive for what we do. It was a really productive time. That's starting back up now. So thank God we got a new administration. I mean, we were it looked like we were pretty doomed if we didn't. So we're basically, the way I explain Western Justice is I kind of took what we did in Protect the Harvest and stayed in a lane. So basically we're in a lane that I know very well. I grew up in it. I know it's my life, which is the Western way of life, the horse industry, the Western horse world, the rodeo world, and the, you know, the ranching community. So that's kind of the lane I stay in. And when I say that, I try to stay out of the cattle business because the cattle, as you know very well, the cattle business can be, you can get yourself in a pickle with one group or the other just by saying the wrong thing when you do it. So we just have taken, you know, the stance of there's three main organizations out there, and I just stay away from them and let them deal with the ins and outs of the cattle industry. Because honestly, I'm not a cattle producer. I've never been a cattle producer. I've worked on some big ranches growing up, but I was a horse trainer. I got into this stuff, you know, over the horse slaughter issue in 2006, trying to keep that going. And that pushed me notoriety wise to a point where it was a very interesting place to be. But it took somebody with some cojones to do it because nobody else wanted to do it. Nobody else wanted to be out there saying anything about it, even though they knew they wanted somebody to do it. But that ended up being me and Sue Wallace. So that's how I got into politics. I was never involved. I had some great mentors, and they were great. Conrad Burns from Montana, the senator from up there, was fabulous on the Senate side. He took me under his wing there. Charlie Stenholm, who was a 28-year congressman from Texas, is a Blue Dog Democrat, very stately Texas gentleman kind of a guy, tall, thin guy, just a great human. And he was my House, the guy that took me around and got me wherever I needed to go in the House back then. So I got a lot of, I don't know if I want to call it notoriety, I got known pretty well early mm-hmm. on. From the first time I went to D.C., people started knowing who I was, and it made it so it was easier for me to maneuver. But I also had some other great mentors over there. One's who I consider the number one agriculture attorney that's ever lived in this country, Gary Bays. So he's actually on my board as my chief counsel, and he's on the board of my regular C3 board and C4 board. So he's, you know, I've got some pretty high-powered people that I've been involved with, and it's helped me to learn the ropes.
And you're kind of hard to forget when you meet you. If you guys haven't met Dave in real life, he's very tall. He's a Marine. He's a cattle guy, and he's a Western person, and he wears this big old cowboy hat everywhere he goes. So you kind of stick out in Washington, D.C. just a little bit.
It's kind of funny because now with the Yellowstone effect, you see a lot of people over there wearing cowboy hats. And they're, yeah. You know, I call the Yellowstone effect the third coming of the urban cowboy. You know, we had the urban cowboy phase back in the 70s and early 80s. And then there was the country music phase that kicked off with all the Dwight Yoakams and Alan Jacksons and Garth Brooks, all of those people. And then that was kind of the second coming. And then now the Yellowstone phase is the third phase of the. And I welcome it. I mean, I love people to want to be a cowboy, want to live the lifestyle, or want to at least pretend it. It helps out not only our industry, but all the people who fund our industry as far as sponsors and things like that, like the hat companies, the tack companies, everybody out there in our business has profited off of this Yellowstone effect and what Taylor's done with that. So,
yeah. Well, I got to go back to your statement about kind of staying in your own lane and mm-hmm. not getting into the inner political fightings of the three major cattle organizations. I think that's why you and I get along, because I let those three do their thing too. Because to me, I'm like, there's a lot more independent cattle ranchers that are a member of none of these organizations. Exactly. And at the end of the day, I think I probably speak for both of us, but we're American first patriots who believe in private property rights and free market capitalism, and everything else is just kind of white noise. And so what do we see that's stripping away those things? We see animal rights activists and environmental extremists and political agendas that seek to further control the American cattle rancher, livestock producer, horse owner. I think that's where we align a lot. It's just that it's that independent, free spirit American that wants to be left alone and be able to run their businesses. And there's all these external threats that are coming. So I guess that leads me into my next question is, what threats maybe are you not as worried about now as we move into a Trump administration? What monkeys are off our back? Maybe the second part would be, what are you concerned about moving forward?
Well, with this administration, I was really concerned with Matt Gaetz. And, you know, that was very concerning to me. Did it put him in a box? If he was attorney general, if he would have been attorney general, does it put him in a box that he's not going to be promoting the animal rights groups? Because let me, for your viewers, Matt Gaetz, there's a lot of cool stuff that he does. I mean, he is a loud voice for the president and helps out a lot. But Matt Gaetz is the number one pusher of the animal rights groups. And I mean, he's one of their humane legislators of the year kind of guy. And Vern Buchanan, another Republican, you know, there in Florida, is the same way. They're the ones that got the, you know, the Greyhounds banned, and they work on a lot of things like that. And actually, I've been trying to get a sit down with Laura Trump, because the reality is Laura's been manipulated, in my mind, by these guys. Mm-hmm. And she's my biggest, I don't really want to call her a problem. I want to more call her an issue in the Trump administration, because she is bought off with these animal rights groups. And as you, well, I'm sure you know, one of the biggest pushers against the Western horse world in the horse world is Marty Irby. Well, he's been over there pushing all these, the Horse Protection Act and all these issues for a long time. And he just started another group that is targeting, it's called the Wilberforce Institute or something along that lines. But he has started this group to target bringing in Republicans into that world. And statistically, we did all, when I was at Protect the Harvest, I did a rundown. I did it myself. I did the whole rundown and laid it out where Humane Society of the United States puts up their rating of how good of a humane legislator you are. So in the Senate in that year, each, and it was 0 to 100, the average Republican senator had like a 15% rating or 15 rating. And at the average Democrat senator had a 85% or 87% rating. Mm-hmm. And then there was in the House, it was kind of very similar. It was, I think it was a little, even a little more lopsided in the House. So that tells you that the Democrats are generally as a whole against our way of life and what right. we do. So that's why, you know, you don't get a lot of support out of Democrats and you don't get a lot of, you don't, we don't give a lot of support to Democrats. Now I work with both sides. I mean, there's been some over the years, there was a Iowa congressman named Leonard Boswell that was just phenomenal on agriculture. And he was a Blue Dog Democrat. But there's hardly any of those guys left. The Blue yeah. Dogs are gone. And those mm-hmm. are those people that ride right down the middle, not, you know, they're just center left, not way left. You know what I mean? So
right.
We're in a world where we had to have that shift. And mm-hmm. right now, my favorite saying is the one about strong men create good times create weak men create hard yep. times create strong men. We are right back going into that strong men create hard time or good times phase. We're going back into that because the weak men have produced hard times for us and we're headed back.
Well, thank God.
Yeah, that's cool.
And you can tired look, of the weak men.
Yeah, you can look back through our history and I mean, way back and see that that's exactly what has happened. That same cycle comes
Absolutely.
Through. So one of the big things that we have to do as an organization, but also as a group of people who are fighting for this is we have to make sure that people don't just go, okay, Trump's in there. He's going to fix everything. No, we have to be at the table. He's right. not going to, we can't fix everything. When we go in and we sit down and go over issues that we're having, that's how those issues get dealt with. We cannot relax. We can't just rely on him to know everything because he does. Hell, he talks about leaves and raking leaves in the forest for fire prevention. I mean, and it was so funny the first time he said that back in the last administration. I called up Corey Lewandowski. I said, Corey and Sean Spicer, I called them both. And I said, guys, get the president to quit talking about leaves in the forest. It's not leaves that are a problem. It's all the brush and the deadfall and all that, especially out west here. It's all
right.
It's all deadfall from pine beetles and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. Our forests look like total fields of pixie sticks. You couldn't graze sheep in a lot of our mountain forests where they used to graze all the time because of the deadfall on the ground. I mean, and these aren't little trees. These are big pine
sure.
trees just laying all over. And that's what needs to be cleaned up, not the leaves. We don't need to go rake leaves.
Right.
He just said that the other day too. It was like,
he did? Oh no. Yeah. We got to get you to DC.
Yeah.
Like, let's talk about grazing and logging and for real land management.
Yeah, exactly.
This holiday season, as you're looking for the perfect Christmas gift for that hard to shop for livestock producer in your life, look no further than a subscription to Ranch Vision. It is the first and only big picture profit planning tool for ranchers. It is not a record keeping software. The inputs are straightforward and easy, and the outputs are powerful. Less time at your computer and more time making management decisions that make you money. Ranch Vision lets you see the big picture of your operation, including all of your financials, so you can make informed management decisions and grow your business. Ranch Vision was designed and founded by folks in the industry. It is user-friendly and available for monthly subscriptions based on herd numbers. It's for all types of grazing operations, including cattle, sheep, and goat. Plan to profit in 2025 with Ranch Vision. Learn more at ranchvision.io.
At Radke Land and Cattle, we proudly use Advanced Ag Products BioReg Plus. With its proprietary coating technology for slow release of essential oils in the lower GI tract, BioReg Plus products are designed and proven to help beef producers with overall performance, feed intake, gut integrity, nutritional support, immunity, fertility, and reproductive health. With the rising cost of beef cattle production today, having optimal performance and minimizing health challenges in every head counts. Learn more at bioreg.com and tell them Amanda sent you.
The Heart of Rural America is presented to you
by CK6 Consulting Services. I have the great pleasure of working alongside the CK6 team, including Chris Earle, Wes Tiemann, and Cody Fleeman, and it's an honor to assist cattle producers as they strive to meet their business goals. With a purebred Angus specialization, we have a full slate of auction sales coming up as we work to maximize price discovery and capture true value for our clients and customers. Plus, let us help you identify your next herd sire for the upcoming breeding season. At CK6 Source, you'll find great customer service, fast shipping, and a focus on leading Angus genetics. Learn more about what we do at ck6consulting.com and ck6source.com. We would love to assist you any way we can. God bless.
So it's notable today, Matt Gaetz did withdraw as of today, as we record this, November 21st. There's several appointments that have been announced. One that's notably missing is the Secretary of Ag. Now, there's a lot of names circling around there. I know you and I have talked about some of those names, but one that's on the list is GT Thompson, which, going back to you talking about the high ranking with the activist groups, GT Thompson is from Pennsylvania. He's the current House Representative Ag Committee Chairman. And he received last year the award for most humane legislator from HSUS. So it's, and when we asked him about it, he just thought he kind of, you know, brushed it off as like not a big deal, but it's again, it goes back to my column this week. I wrote, Trump isn't going to save America. We are, because now we have an opportunity to be on offense. Now we have an opportunity to actually make sure conservatives are doing conservative things to preserve what's right and good about this country, instead of just sitting back and hoping that Trump and his cohorts fix it. We have to be the one that vocalize what needs to be fixed and how it can be done. So maybe just going down the list of, I thought some of your thoughts. I guess let's talk about that Secretary of Ag position. Who would you like to see fill that slot?
You know, the two people that come up a lot around me, and I'm not sure that, you know, because you never know what Trump's going to do. I mean, right. He might pull a rabbit out of his hat and take somebody that none of us are even paying attention to. But I've heard Massey. I heard Cindy Hyde-Smith got offered it and said she liked being in the Senate. She didn't want to do it.
Okay.
She would have been phenomenal, by the way. I love her. She's a great senator and great human. Sid Miller from Texas is another one. Sid, I would love to see Sid in there. There's Kip Thom from Indiana, you know, which is, he's an establishment farmer. He's going to toe the line establishment wise. Sid Miller might go in and do more of the bidding of Trump by going in and actually shaking things up. I mean, right. He's well known for that. And him and Trump, he's rode, when he goes to Texas, he's rode in the beast with him back when he was president.
Well, sure.
First administration. So Sid knows him well, and he knows Sid. And from what I understood in the first administration, that Sonny Perdue was going to leave at the end of the first administration. And if Trump would have won, Sid was the pick at the time to go in and take his place.
Okay. So,
I don't know. I mean, at this point, with the way things are going and the appointments that are going on right now, I don't know who's going to be in there. And I'm really anxious to figure that one out, because we have a lot of work we do with the USDA. Now, luckily, a lot of the same players that I dealt with before at USDA were all under the secretary. I mean, we were able to accomplish some wonderful stuff. You know, there was a friend of mine that is the oldest ranch in Nevada, oldest single family, single iron ranch in Nevada. It was established back in 1862, I think, when Nevada became a state. And she had wrote a 8-point grazing plan and sent it to Trump and just sent a letter to him. And he actually called her. And I won't get into the whole call, but it was quite entertaining because she's a typical ranch woman and she didn't believe she was going to be talking to the president. So it was kind of a funny situation. But he talked to her for a half hour or better about this grazing plan that she sent. And then he sent it over to Sonny Perdue and David Bernhardt and said, you guys need to make secretarial orders about this. So they did. And it's a different name. It's a directive or something like that in the USDA, not a secretarial order. I think the interior can do a secretarial order, but the USDA has to do a directive. Well, they did that. They finally got it worked out. He signed that executive order over Christmas, called this lady back and said, I'm going to do it over Christmas. We're not going to do a signing, a fanfare signing or anything like that, because I don't want a bunch of publicity on it. Within 6 months, I was down in Burns with the Hammonds going to a meeting with the BLM director for that area. And I asked him about it. I said, well, that thing says, and basically it said that they had to take care of every department that had land, had to take care of and identify 750,000 acres at a time every year and clean that ground up and get grazing back out on it and take care of it so that it would manage fires. It was all about fire management and mitigation and getting the grazing back out there. Nobody was doing it. And that's when I told, you know, 2 months later, I was at Kevin McCarthy's Take Back the House event in Jackson Hole, Wyoming in 2020. And I told him, I said, I hope that someday, I told Sonny Perdue this. I said, Sonny, I said, Mr. Secretary, the reality is, the Forest Service in the West is considered the most corrupt organization in the federal government. And I said, they're just flipping you. And I said, I'm not blaming this on you, but they're just flipping you and the president, the bird right now, and just doing, they're just waiting you out. And they got their way. And then right after I said that was in a big meeting. And right after I said that, I looked at McCarthy because we were hoping he was going to take back the House in 2020, which he didn't. But I looked at him and I said, I hope that somebody in power someday is going to do something about bureaucratic reform, because these bureaucrats are the ones that are causing all these problems, putting ranchers out of business. And I don't know how much you know about what's going on in Nevada, but I use Nevada because it's so egregious. But there's hundreds of ranchers that have been either run out of business, couldn't litigate, whatever. The Hayes is probably the most famous case, where they ended up, their ranch finally sold after a 45-year litigation with the federal government, finally sold on the courthouse steps.
Wow.
And they couldn't do anything about it. Well, so many people had gone away prior to that because they didn't have the money to fight. They watched the Hages. They watched what happens when you fight against the federal government. And that kind of stuff needs to stop. The federal government is supposed to be there to aid us in being productive in the United States and making the United States productive, not to taking people's rights away and then putting them out of business and trying to get their land. I mean, there's millions of acres in Nevada that doesn't get grazed because they've cut all the allotments back. These are and it's all Forest Service. A lot of it's Forest Service stuff, where the Forest Service has kicked their, because every one of those mountain ranges doesn't look like there's crap on them. But you go out there and they used to graze them. They'd graze them with cattle and sheep, and they'd go through, they'd graze a certain amount of time with one and then go through with the other one and clean it up. That's why the fires are so massive now. There's so much fuel on the ground that they can't slow them down.
I was just at American Agri-Women, their conference here over the weekend, and talking to one of the ranch women there from Nevada. And she says it's just unbelievable, the cutting off of the water rights and just really kind of handcuffing the ranchers at every turn. It really does feel like the government hates the people at times. And I hope I guess maybe as I look at these appointments, what makes me kind of really excited to see what shakes loose is Vivek and Elon with their Doge.
I've already got a bunch of stuff I'm putting together in my mind and trying to start getting it on paper to write down, because right now these environmental groups that are trying to put us all out of business, are getting funded. There's $800 to $900 million that goes out the back door of the Interior Department on Sue and Settle, the Equal Access to Justice funds, which Reagan put in there. So with a great thought of, you know, before you couldn't sue the federal government, and now most of it's on the ESA stuff. So we need to go in and do a revamp of the Equal Access to Justice funds. We don't want to take away the full ability, because we want to be able to sue the federal government. But these environmental groups have bastardized it so much. And when Aurelia Skip was the Fish and Wildlife Director, I went up there, me and Forrest Lucas were sitting and having a meeting with her. And she was just like, we can't keep up with all these lawsuits. We get two or three lawsuits a day.
Wow.
And we can't respond to them. And if we don't respond to them, they win and they get their money. And these $300 attorneys, an hour attorneys, get paid out, some of them up to $3,000 an hour through that Equal Access to Justice Fund. So we have all these environmental groups are being funded a lot by our own government, this Sue and Settle deal. And it's just, it's ridiculous.
You guys know, as a beef girl, I take grilling very seriously around here. And I've been using Redmond Real Salt for over a decade to season my steaks and burgers. It's unrefined, ancient sea salt, exactly as nature made it. It contains 60 plus naturally occurring trace minerals, and it truly brings out the best of the beef we raise at home on the ranch. This American family-owned business also focuses on livestock products. And at Radke Land and Cattle, we are proud to use the beneficial Redmond Real Salt minerals to get back to the basics and help our cattle improve fertility, immunity, and feed efficiency. It's natural, simple, and effective for people and livestock. Discover more at redmondagriculture.com and redmondlife.com and use code RADKE to save. Or contact a local dealer and mention my name for a special discount.
Working cattle can be stressful at times, but the job is made so much easier with equipment that is safe, strong, and simply designed. I highly recommend Real Tough Livestock Equipment for all your working facility needs. We just installed the deluxe chute at Radke Land and Cattle, and it has been an absolute game changer as we run cows through our chute during AI season. It's durable and easy to use, and it's made to last a lifetime. Real Tough offers a wide range of products, including calving barns, panels, loading chutes, tubs, alleys, and portable working systems. Manufactured in the U.S. of A., Real Tough is family-owned and operated. Their commitment to helping farm and ranch families truly exemplifies what this show is all about. Learn more at realtough.com, that's T-U-F-F, and be sure to tell them Amanda sent you to receive an extra bonus with your order. Let's get you some iconic green Real Tough equipment headed your way. I promise you're going to love it.
So do you know much about the new EPA administrator then, this Lee Zeldin?
I don't know a lot about him, but the good news was I was on the phone with Gary Bays, the attorney, and Gary is he helped form the EPA back when it was first formed.
Okay.
And it's been bastardized and bastardized, just like every federal government that meant well has done or happened. And we were on the phone and his chief of staff called him while we were on the phone. So he got off the phone. So that's a really good sign that he is reaching out to Gary Bays for, you know, information and, you know, some knowledge there, because that guy knows more about what's happened with EPA and what it was set up for than anybody. And Scott Pruitt when he was in there, he was doing the same thing.
I've got to ask, obviously I'm from South Dakota, so the Dakotas stick out to me, but the Dakotas have been in the news a lot here lately.
Yeah, they have. Yeah.
And we have Senator Thune is now the majority leader. We have Kristi Noem is going to be Secretary of Homeland Security. And then North Dakota's Governor Doug Burgum is the Interior Secretary. I guess, do you have any comments on that and what that might mean for the Trump administration?
I thought that was a weird choice. I thought that was an odd choice because I was hoping we were going to have an Interior Secretary that was from out west, where most of the public lands are and a lot of their budget is. As we've talked about, at one time I would have been for Kristi to be part of that, but because of her issues that she has with the tribes, you know, the BIA falls under there. I deal a lot with the tribes. I do a lot of stuff for the tribes, and I have a lot of strong tribal ties. Even though I'm a card-carrying Frenchman, I don't have Indian in me at all that I know of, but I do a lot of work with them, especially over their horse issues. So that's how I've gotten into helping them out a bunch. You know, the fact that she's banned from every tribe in the state of South Dakota that from stepping foot on them, that's a pretty, would be a pretty tough job for her to have. But as Homeland Security, I think that's fine. That's a big department. She's going to have a lot of good people around her to help her out and deal with a lot of that stuff. Burgum's the one I worry about because of the pipeline deal and his affiliation with that. I don't know how much public lands. Do they have hardly any public lands in North Dakota?
I don't probably know more than South Dakota does. I don't think so.
Yeah. I've never looked at a map to see what North Dakota has for public lands and that the Interior Department would be over. Granted, but having somebody else from a different view come in and go, hey, this is common sense and not bought off by special interest or, you know, but we all know that the special interest got to him on the pipeline. So that's going to be, I'm going to hold my opinion until I start getting around him and able to meet him and see what he's going to do. I'm cautiously hopeful that he'll do the right thing on a lot of these issues. And we have a lot of issues, especially in the Interior Department. There's a lot to unpack there. And like I said, the Forest Service is under USDA. So whoever gets that, I'm going to be in their ear a lot or their people are going to know me a lot because of the issues that we have with Forest Service out here in the West.
Right. Well, I'm kind of the same mindset. I'm sort of in a wait and see mode because obviously that carbon pipeline fight has been huge in the Dakotas, and both Kristi Noem and Doug Burgum are connected to it. And we've been really hopeful with the Trump administration that, he would defund the Inflation Reduction Act. He would end the Green New Deal. And thus all of these projects, the carbon sequestration, the solar, the wind, that would go by the wayside and we'd actually focus on real energy independence. And so those two seem like a mixed bag of I'm not sure how they fit into the mix here. But then you also have Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and you've got Vivek, both who have spoke against the carbon pipelines, and they're right in this administration too. So it's going to be an interesting time. But again, it goes back to what we've said the whole time since the beginning of this episode. It's going to take the right people surrounding Trump, but that means us too. And we have a voice and an ability to communicate those things and really to hold these appointments and Trump accountable to follow through on the promises of that America First movement that we saw a red wave go across the country. The voters want what they want, and I'm going to expect accountability and follow through.
To me, that's the key reason we're doing what we're doing with Western Justice. And I do, if I can get in the door and be at the highest levels, I know how to get in the door and start the conversation. So I've got people who clean up for us, you know, and can go in and clean all that stuff up. I've got an appointment for the BIA that I want to get people involved with. I've got all kinds of people out there that don't fall in the line of Western Justice, but we can go open the door to get that conversation going. And that's what it needs. We got to have that.
Well, full disclosure for all the listeners, I've already told Dave behind the scenes, when you're getting those meetings in DC, I'm hopping on a plane and I'm going too, because I got some messages from South Dakota to send to Trump. You know, I guess any other ones that you've kind of are excited about or interested in? Any thoughts on Kennedy being in charge of Human Health Services?
Is there a lot of things that he can fix. Yeah. I think there's going to be things that he's going to run into roadblocks with, and it's probably not going to happen. I mean, I was talking to a guy down in Texas about Kennedy just this last weekend. And I said, listen, do you know, and this is a guy that was big in agriculture. And I said, I want you, do you know who Norman Borlaug is? And he goes, no. And I go, well, you should look him up.
Yeah.
Because all this talk about GMOs and all this talk about all that stuff, we wouldn't have most of the vegetables that we consider great vegetables if it wasn't for them being genetically modified. Broccoli, all those kind of things. And now you can go on the hunt and the fight over pesticides and herbicides and all that stuff and our different fertilizers and all that. But and maybe make a case for some of that stuff to not be around. But where I think Kennedy's going to be the best is I saw a meme the other day on Twitter of Heinz ketchup, and maybe you saw this, the Heinz ketchup bottle and the ingredients of a U.S. Heinz ketchup and then the ingredients of a U.K. Heinz ketchup.
Mm-hmm.
And it was all natural in the U.K. Everything was natural. There was none of all the bullshit that goes into ours. And
yep.
And then you look at ours and there's all this stuff in there that is, it keeps the shelf life or whatever. I mean, think about it. If you go buy normal bread or a McDonald's hamburger, I know somebody that had a McDonald's hamburger in their pickup, one of the two cheeseburger meals, like deal, unwrapped it. It had been there for almost a year and it wasn't moldy. How in the holy hell does that happen?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? That's to me, that is, it's like, what am I putting in my body? So those kind of things, and the dyes and all the stuff that he talks about, he's been talking about, that I don't have a problem with him taking all that out. I eat pretty clean anyway.
Yeah.
So I would much rather see people eating clean. I think that's part of our health issues. And I do believe that. So I'm hoping that's what he concentrates on, because, you know, he's going to have 2 years at least. And hopefully if they get enough done and everybody still seems great with it, then we have 4 years to deal with some of that. And then maybe even beyond. But
right. Yeah. I know there's a lot of corn farmers that are really nervous, you know, and I get it. But I do, I guess for his appointment, I am hopeful of those same things you are. Like I saw he was just fact checked because he talked about Fruit Loops. And in the fact checks, they pointed out, well, you know, and the they're both flavored, but in the one that he was comparing it to, instead of the red and blue dyes, it was blueberries and like raspberries. Yeah. That was what said sweetened and colored the Fruit Loops. And I'm like, hello, you just proved his point. But what made me really excited is him starting to talk about beef tallow and cooking with animal fats again instead of seed oils. Now the corn guys might not like that, but the reality is, I mean, between our dietary guidelines for Americans, which I believe has been the worst experiment in human health in probably global history. I mean, the American people have the highest rates of obesity and diabetes and heart disease and cancers and autoimmune diseases and ADHD and all these different things. And it's like, well, maybe we need to start asking those questions. And I think he's kind of on the right track in some of the things he's talking about, that maybe it is time to get back to the basics, meat, dairy, and eggs, you know?
Well, and he's going to be looking at a lot of the drugs that they give us. And as you know, I had a heart attack in January. Obviously, it wasn't bad enough to kill me. So I started researching myself and the statins and all that stuff. I want to go away from all that. And I have gone away from it all. There's things that we're missing in our food supply that we don't get enough of, like vitamin K2, that kind of stuff. And now all of a sudden the FDA has been telling us, and every doctor's telling you that you can't, if you're on a statin, you can't get off. You got to lower your cholesterol. Well, you're
right.
I'm a prime example. I was on all of that stuff, listening to him for 8 months. And then I finally said, no, I'm getting off this stuff. This is causing cramps. I've never been a cramper in my life. And, you know, started dealing with that. And I started researching with a cardiology unit in Arizona. And turns out vitamin K2 puts all the plaque, or not plaque, it's calcium. Plaque is calcium, where it's supposed to be. We're not getting enough of that in our diet. And that's where a lot of our issues are coming from, are not taking care of that. And I can guarantee you, when I went off of the statins, And I'm only 50, I'm 59. So when I went off the statins, every day afterwards for about a week, my cognitive level, I noticed a huge jump in my ability to stay focused and going all day without aid of caffeine or anything like that. So
sure. Yeah, I think, I mean, the two go hand in hand. And I think we all saw it during COVID, just how wildly influential the pharmaceutical companies are. Mm-hmm. And who benefits the most? What's the most profitable? To have a weak and sick society that can be easily controlled because they're a constant customer instead of an independent, strong, and healthy citizen who's like can stand up for themselves and fight for the Constitution and their liberties. And, you know, I'm gonna put my money on healthful living. And I think it just, you know, this administration can do a lot of things, but it again is up to we the people to prioritize those things. I mean, we have the opportunity to buy and eat those things now and not be a customer of the crazy products. But I guess I was on the phone with another legislator the other day, and he probably summed it up best, where he said, it kind of seems to me like the theme of the Trump administration is just to kind of, you know, go in there and mess some things up. So let's see what happens in like the best way possible. Let's shake things up and see what happens.
I think he's smart enough. It's just like what Elon did with Twitter. You know, he went in there and fired, you know, 3/4 of the workforce, and they thought it was going to go down and go tits up and all that. And it didn't. The usage went down for a little while because all the people that were using it that were the opposition went away, but it's built up now into a monster again. And I just saw the video of him talking about he wanted to get rid of, he had three servers. There was three servers for Twitter, and one was in Sacramento. He wanted to get rid of the one in Sacramento. It was going to take 6 months for them to get to it.
Yeah.
He turned his plane around, went back there, and went to Home Depot, bought wire cutters and a couple other things. And he went in there and rented a U-Haul and had his bodyguards help him get underneath the floor, cut the wires, and move the server into a truck and took it out of there in an hour. And he did that. And everybody said, all the technicians, all the smart people at Twitter said it was going to go down. You know, it would take Twitter down. There was a little bit of a adjustment period. It didn't go down totally, but it was little glitches here and there for a day or two, and they got it all back together. Now he's down one whole server deal that he doesn't need anymore.
Right. Well, if that's what they do and go and slash 75% of the federal government, I'm a happy camper. Oh, they don't need to do anything else, to be honest.
Here's hoping. And it's funny because I got a lot of friends that work, that are good people that work within the federal government that I deal with a lot.
Yep.
And they're all calling me and they're going, hey, can you help me get a job here? Or can you help me get a job? I want this position. I want that position. I want to move over to this one. And it's because they're all jockeying right now, going, holy shit, we got no place to go. And they're going to fire us all.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's pretty entertaining to see the, and if any of them are listening, it's entertaining for you guys, about you guys, but it's entertaining about the full level, you know, FDA and all the different groups that you're seeing, all these reports where all these people are talking about how they're going to quit and disappear and go out to find a job in the real world.
Well, and there's obviously wonderful people that work for our government, but I don't think anyone would disagree that our government is bloated and out of control, and we have trillions of dollars in debt. And so it's time to, if we really care about the future of this country, the efficiency.
I have a really good friend. I'm not going to say her name. She's probably one of the smartest people I know. And she actually ended up being in the first Trump administration. And she was kind of like a sniper that went all over. She would call me, and she talks like a Marine. And so she'd call me and say, dude, I just cut $20 million worth of fat frog farting in the mud kind of programs. And they were sending her around. She was going to different departments and cutting things like that in the first administration. So she was she cut probably hundreds of millions of dollars worth of programs in the first administration. So she's back on the team. So it's going to be fun to watch all this stuff happen, because there's going to be a lot of people crying.
Yeah. Don't tempt me with a good time, let me tell you.
Yeah, exactly.
So All right, so to close, because we've way blown past our time, I've got people fixing my heater in my house. Can you hear it? It's like so loud. Oh, so I guess just to kind of close, you're a Marine. You've been in this, you've been serving our country a long time through your, you know, your service, but also your private life, your career. What advice would you have for people to kind of prioritize the future of this country and to move forward in a way that's on the offense instead of the defense in the next 4 years?
Don't be a passenger. Get out there. Everybody, everywhere I go, even with Protect, for the 8 years I was at Protect the Harvest and prior to that, and there, it always takes, I'm a team builder. So I go into an area and if there's a problem going on, I need that Aaron Brockovich in that area to come out and help and coordinate, that knows a lot of people, all of that. So when there's issues, step up to the plate and be that person. Kind of like what my friend Amanda does, you know? So, I mean, that's that, it's not that hard. It's not that difficult. You're going to piss a couple people off, but the majority of people will thrive and be very supportive of you to do it. But people need to stand up and be counted. And we're a membership organization. I got to give a plug to Western Justice, but we're like the, I tell people we're what NRA is to guns, we are to the Western lifestyle. So that's basically in a nutshell what we are. And we do a lot of work. We saved a ranch in Oregon from a $35 million DOJ lawsuit. There's all kinds of different things we do. And you can go on our website and see a lot of it. But there's a lot of things that that people don't see. And just know that when something bad comes up in D.C., on a bill, we're usually on it. And I'm usually on the phone talking to somebody that's on that committee that can either strip it, change it, or get it blocked, totally blocked. So I'll bet you every cycle I block at least minimum of 25 things to 100, you know, depending on what the year is that the animal rights groups are really pushing a lot of stuff. And that's, you know, that goes for, that doesn't even count the state level stuff we do.
Right. Well, and yeah, I would encourage folks to check out Western Justice. And, you know, people tell me all the time, you know, thanks, Amanda, for fighting. And I always say, well, I'm only as good as the people that stand next to me. And exactly. That's what Western Justice needs. They need to grow their membership, their support to keep a guy like Dave on the road in D.C. out fighting the good fight. It takes many of us. And I truly believe the weight of it all is heavy at times, but the load gets a lot lighter if we carry it together. Right.
One thing that I like people to understand, and I want people to think about this, especially in your world where you're in the ranching and the farming community, if you put ranching, the Western horse world, which is what I consider the Western horse, which represents about 75% of the domestic horse in the United States. So the cutting, the reining, the cow horse, the mounted shooters, and rodeo, you put ranching, the Western horse world, and rodeo together. There's no bigger, more financially well-heeled group of people in the United States. And if we all come together and we can come together under one blanket, we could be the biggest lobby in the United States. We could stop stop so much going on, even things you don't think about. Because anything that comes out of the Interior Department, the USDA, or the EPA that affects all these other groups like mining and timber and the oil and gas all affect ranching. So if we all came together, we could effectively fix America. And we are the last bastion of hope of God-fearing, you know, patriotic people. The Western world is, in my opinion.
I absolutely agree. I've said it many times because as you know, our pipeline fight here is never ending. But I said, I don't think it's any surprise to me that it's a whole bunch of cattle ranchers that are kind of leading the charge on it, because we are independent minded and we want to be left alone and we believe in this country and we love the land and the livestock and people. So that's what you represent to me too, Dave. And I'm just thankful for the friendship and for your fight. And I hope that we can connect sometime very soon on the road to fight the good fight in 2025. So
when I go, I'm calling you because I need a woman in the room when we go. So
awesome.
I need one that can chew somebody's ass, and that's what we need.
I'll be there
in a polite way.
Yeah, in a nice way. Yes.
Yeah, you can do it in a polite way. You're good at that.
All right. Well, we'll be looking for another update very soon in 2025, Dave. So until then, we'll see you on the Dusty Trail.
All right. Thanks.
While I've got you here, I would love to invite you to check out my website, AmandaRadke.com. Each week, I share my column, this podcast, and new items to shop for farm and ranch families, including my children's books that celebrate agriculture. Use code DUSTYTRAIL to save 15% on your next purchase. Thank you from the bottom of my heart for supporting my small business and for your continued support in keeping me on the road fighting for farm and ranch families. I'm thankful to each and every one of you who tune into this show each week. New episodes drop every Wednesday, so be sure to subscribe, share, and leave a review to let me know how you're liking the content and our guests. Until the next time we meet on the Dusty Trail, I'm Amanda Radke, and this is the heart of rural America.